Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 108 of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's leading pod for consumers of dystopian beverages. This week, we've got artificial drinks, artificial currencies, and three highly convincing artificial people. My chatbots today are Tamlin McGee.
Hello.
That was very convincing. Dominic Preston.
Hi.
And Sean Bradley.
Hello.
Now, slightly different this week. We've got some special drinks. Tamlin's got the drinks in. What have we got this week, Tamlin?
We've got a drink called Soylent, which launched for the first time in the UK this September, trading on a Silicon Valley idea as a meal replacement drink. It sort of famously got a lot of people sick when they were found to be brewing them.
No one told me that.
I imagine it's all been sorted out for the UK relaunch because they've got like quite strong branding rather than translucent sort of jerry can-esque jugs now. So that's good.
Yeah, avoid the jerry can.
Manufactured by Rosa Foods. It is here.
Are we receiving money for this? I assume this is some sort of sponsorship deal.
Well, no. Originally, the idea was to have someone from Soylent on the podcast with us, but it didn't happen for various reasons, so never mind. They might not like what we have to say anyway, I suspect.
Okay, anyone that wants to send in drinks, by the way, feel free. We do like drinking things.
We'll drink anything on the podcast.
Apparently we will. Yeah. So what I thought we could do is that we could sort of drink this periodically throughout the pod today.
Yeah.
We haven't actually chilled them. Are they meant to be chilled?
They're meant to be chilled.
I'm trying to find out.
We're about to find out.
It says that it's produced with genetic engineering, very unsettling.
That's what it is.
So maybe,
yeah.
I don't know.
Do we know? Is it people?
It's probably people.
I mean, it's tasting people, though.
This is the plot to a horror film. What we're doing.
Right. No, I mean, it literally is.
Yeah, I know, it's Soylent, right?
They're not branding it as people. They're branding it as a meal replacement drink for gamers. So.
But they didn't brand it as people in the film either. The whole thing of the film, it's a revelation when they're like, oh, it's people. That's a surprise.
Right. I mean, this really would be hiding in plain sight, isn't it?
So if it tastes somewhat like chicken, maybe it's people.
Right.
It's probably people.
Well, we wouldn't even get the surprise. So
David's got the original flavour, so that's the one that will be the pure people taste.
Okay.
Whereas yours is people. Plus
chocolate and coffee.
What do you have, Sean?
Also cacao.
I've got mocha with caffeine and L-theanine, whatever that is.
good. I like it.
Lovely bit of L-theanine with the boys.
Okay. Who wants to have the first?
I think we better know what original it is, David.
Oh my god. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's the canary right over there, Mr. Price.
It smells sort of vanilla-y. Delicious vanilla-y people. Oh my god, that's fucking disgusting.
Oh, that's good. Good pod banter.
I think
the sound of people quietly drinking and grumbling. Yeah. Good radio.
What kind of texture were we talking about here? Because I tried Huel before and it was the texture that got me on Huel. The texture was horrible.
It's not quite right. It's,
oh my god, it looks like fucking diarrhea.
Oh, we're selling it.
It's somewhat reminiscent of a smoothie. There was some quite nice smoothie they used to do, but it's more cloying on the tongue. Mm. I've got a sort of film on my tongue. But the vanilla-y taste is not terrible, but it's sort of slightly sour.
Yeah.
It's not horrible, and I'm getting more into it.
I really want to try it before you keep talking more, because you're not selling it, so, yeah.
I don't... It's odd. It tastes of chemicals and machinery.
That's not actually as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Cacao's okay.
Yeah, the cacao just tastes like a slightly off chocolate milkshake. Mm.
Slightly off.
Only slightly off, you know. I draw the line at slightly.
Okay, that's a chocolate. And what about the mocha?
It doesn't smell anything like coffee.
Drink it.
fucking hell.
I think maybe we should try and describe Dom's face. Jim Dan,
yeah.
I would say that was a look of dismay.
Yeah, disappointment, fear was in there.
Puckered misery.
Yeah.
That's your wrestling name, isn't it?
Puckered Misery, yeah.
Yeah.
Here comes Puckered Misery.
DJ Puckered Misery.
I have protein shakes pretty regularly, so I really thought it was going to be in that kind of ballpark of flavour, and I thought I was ready for what this was going to be.
So we've got the same one, Dom.
Yeah. Okay. That's horrible.
What are the benefits of this? It's like medicine, I guess. Medicine sometimes tastes bad, but it does you good. Is it doing me good?
I've got the press release right here, and it's marketed at gamers, because apparently over half of gamers frequently miss meals while they're gaming. So if your standards are that low, then maybe you don't mind, you know, having a bit of a swig on a human drink, I don't know.
So it covers all the food groups, is that
I think it's...
Yeah, it's meant to be just us.
It's supposed to have everything that you need in it. I don't think it's got any doctor recommendations just yet, but... Okay, I'm going to
But it's very convenient. Go on, drink it.
Confusion, yeah. I think, is the predominant emotion there.
Confusion with a lingering...
Regret.
Yeah. But not as bad as I thought it was going to be, actually.
Mm.
It's much worse to look at than it is to drink.
Yeah, I just see a sort of chocolatey milkshake drink, but that taste is death.
I actually think the look of mine is very good. Like I said, it looks like a vanilla smoothie. One you used to get.
The chocolate one is actually not bad, I have to say. I'm quite surprised.
Mm. You can really taste the L-theanine.
Good.
Are you getting any of the coffee flavours from this one?
No, just L-theanine. Yeah.
I feel like we should move on. We're going to carry on drinking these. Are we going to hereby pledge to finish our four bottles?
Oh, God. No,
can we make that pledge to our listeners? So much of it.
I have already had breakfast, and you know, it's a
that is effectively another we're going to have a short break now after that excellent radio content that you've enjoyed, and we're going to talk about something a bit more serious. So. We're recording this on the day before Black Friday. Hopefully we'll manage to get this published before Black Friday because we're talking about it. Dominic,
yeah.
What is Black Friday?
if you somehow missed it the last few years, it's a big annual sales event. It's a sort of US export, but now it's massive everywhere. In the US, it sort of makes some sense. It's the day after Thanksgiving, so we're recording today. It's Thanksgiving in the States. And then Black Friday is sort of the day after. It's in the same way in the UK. We get Boxing Day sales, which I've never entirely understood who wants to go to shops on Boxing Day, but it's a thing.
Get away from your family, I guess, sometimes. Yeah. I mean, that's semi-serious.
Family man David here.
And your kids, David.
I love my kids, but they're hard work. It gets a bit boring, though, doesn't it? When you've got that extended period, you know, you finish work on, like, the 23rd sometimes, and then you've got 3 or 4 days consecutively at home.
Oh, wish I was
can't
at
get out. you can't get out of the house because it's cold. And then I think a lot of people, they're like, they want to get out of the house and do something, and then you add the bargains thing.
Yeah.
Mm. I guess it's similar with Thanksgiving. A few people have said, actually, in the office, we are a UK office here, they've said that they do celebrate Thanksgiving, which slightly baffles me.
I live with a Canadian, and she has a friend over from Canada who sort of said, oh, we don't make a big thing of Thanksgiving over in Canada, but you guys do here, right? Like, it's a big thing in the UK. And I was like, no.
No.
Yeah. I don't know why for me, it's purely just, it's the US thing,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
I've been to a couple of Thanksgiving meals by strange English friends. And I don't mind that necessarily because I really like the food that's associated with it, particularly the pumpkin pie.
Yeah,
if that's right, sort of sweet pumpkin pie. That's very nice. But there was a really annoying bit after to where you all have to say what we're thankful for. And I don't think it's an English thing to be thankful for anything.
Really. No. So
why are we interested in Black Friday then, as tech review websites?
I mean, for us, it's basically just pretty much anything techie. I mean, anything is going to be on sale this weekend, which makes a massive time because it essentially changes all the buying advice we'd normally give people. A lot of, you know, the recommendations we give people on what they should pick up are inevitably based on price. So a lot of the concerns are, you know, is buying the Apple tablet worth the premium you're paying over getting the Samsung tablet or whatever? And it all goes a bit out the window on Black Friday because suddenly, you know, some things will be reduced in price and there'll be totally disproportionate reductions. And it's a way to get, mean, you can save a stupid amount of money if you don't buy anything the rest of the year and buy it all now.
I saw, Sean on the way into work this morning. We agreed it's probably not something we should be discussing at Tech Review's website. But there was a recent witch study, I don't know if you saw it, that said that about 87% of the things that you can buy on Black Friday are cheaper other times of the year.
Yeah, so
marketed it to such a degree.
There's sort of an... I read that witch report as well, and there's some truth to it. It's also a bit misleading. Some of it is sort of... Part of the thing with Black Friday is it's the concentration of sales. Everything is on sale at once. Right. So sure, they sort of picked out and said, okay, yeah, you can get this Fitbit cheaper at this other time of the year. But yeah, that's because that site had a Fitbit sale on. Mm-hmm. But the point is, at the time they had that Fitbit sale on, they put massive offers on their Fitbits.
Right.
But they didn't also have offers on their TVs and their speakers and their headphones and their computers and their...
Yeah, true.
Black Friday is everything's on sale at once. It's not guaranteed to be the cheapest price you'll find for every product.
Mm-hmm.
But most things will sell. And you do have to be savvy. And there are some things that are really misleading. And part of like our job at the moment is to basically go through and figure out which of the deals are actually good and which ones are rubbish. And I have had, you know, some deals sent to me by tech companies and by shops where I look and say, I know for a fact that was cheaper than that 2 weeks ago.
One case of Soylent only.
So there is stuff that's rubbish. But it's more, I think it's the breadth of the deals. It's the fact that anything you want to buy, pretty much, you'll be able to find cheaper this weekend, which just isn't true any other time of the year.
Mm. And we can be honest here, it is also a money spinner for us.
Publishing
personally.
Now, you know, a lot of publishers rely on that sort of e-commerce thing where we get some 1% tick of a sale driven by our site. And that's a lot of what drives us to do it. There's a lot of traffic in it for us. Obviously, people are looking for tech advice at the moment. But there's also then if you buy something by after clicking on a link from us, we get some like little cut, which all builds up over time. But you know, what's important with that is to not just recommend something because of that little cut. Mm. And again, like I said, you know, I'm you know, I've been part of my job is looking at electric toothbrush deals, which are one of those ones that's really difficult because if you buy an electric toothbrush in the UK, you know, you can buy one that's at RRP 300 quid. But throughout the year, it's £140 on Amazon.
Yeah, nobody pays.
So if you see the Black Friday deal saying it's only £140, part of my job has been going through to say that's not a deal. It's that price all the time. It looks like it's 160 quid off, but it's not. That's just how much it sells for.
Yeah.
But this toothbrush is actually £30 off the normal price this week.
That sounds like a really annoying thing to cover.
Yes. It's not. I don't think it's any of our favourite week of the year from an editorial perspective in terms of the work we have to do. But, you know, it's useful. Yeah. I think, it, you know, there are misleading deals and part of the job is to save people from it.
We do have a role in that, I think, because you have to think, why would they come to us and not just go to Amazon?
Exactly.
And the reason is we don't have the same incentive that Amazon does to push bad deals. It's like our unique selling point is differentiating. And then we do make money out of it. So you're right, we have to be very careful about that.
And a lot of it is also... People will use Black Friday to clear old stock. So we've seen deals that sound like they're really good, but it's actually just because that tablet's 3 years old. Yeah, so they're just trying to get rid of the last ones that go in the warehouse.
That's cheeky. Right.
But if you're not, you know, if you're not really aware of the marketplace, you might not know that particular Galaxy tablet is an old one, and you might think, oh, that's a great price for a tablet. But, you know.
It's mostly Amazon that benefits from all this shopping madness. How do... How do they cope with that sudden ramping up of demand?
I think Tamlin knows more about this than me, but it's just a massive influx of temporary staff and stuff from aware and people being forced to work horrible, horrible, horrible hours to, you know, suppliers with all our goods.
There's a very good article in The Verge, I think it was, the other day, where a former Amazon warehouse manager talked about working at Amazon warehouses.
Vox, I think it was.
Vox, thank you, yeah. They're the same network, are they?
Oh,
same publisher, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it basically said that it's a horrible, horrible experience. No one looks forward to the holidays because the pressure is just heaped on even more. They had to... Managers all showed up at 5 a.m. and then arrive early for a pep talk.
For a pep talk, that's the worst bit of it. Imagine
The false enthusiasm just echoing around the room.
It's like having to work for an Apple store, but then not getting the benefits as well.
Yeah.
It's like just as bad as being in a Chinese iPhone factory. Well, no, probably not quite as bad. it's pretty horrendous. The thing that struck me about that was weird was that the managers have almost worse jobs than the, what do they call them, associates. I really hate the terminology as well. I think I guess the standard employees have a more physical job and they are more exhausted, but they do shorter hours and they get breaks. Whereas the managers, it's like,
and being a manager must be a bit like being a class traitor, right?
You're yeah,
a camp guard type yeah. situation where absolutely. You're the overseer of maybe not the best metaphor to use, but yeah, they just have to keep a close watch on all of their employees at all times and have a go at them if they're not meeting these ridiculous quotas that have been covered like extensively by us and everywhere about how generally horrible it is to work at Amazon anyway, let alone on Black Friday.
And then they're to fire them, but the system is weird. The system is sort of so close to being fully automated, but they still insist on putting human cogs in these key areas. So the system basically defines when somebody has to be fired. Like if they take more than an hour away off task, they have all this, it's all computerized all their time. And if they're off task for an hour, then that's an instant firing. And if it's half an hour, then they get, oh, they've got a progressive write-up or something like that. And then two of those and you're instantly fired. But they still make a human do that. They still make a human talk to them and say, well, you know, you're not really doing, pulling it away. But it's like the computer decided it, but they have to be the person that delivers the news. And it's really cruel on the managers, I think.
It's cruel on everyone, I think. I mean
definitely.
You have to wonder, like, when this sort of invisible cost of all these deals or like cheap next day delivery is gonna, there's more awareness of it now, I think, but not enough to stop people from getting a good deal on Amazon on Black Friday. Yeah. I think they account for something like 40% of all Black Friday.
I think I read more. I thought it was more like 60.
60,
was,
right?
You know, they're so ridiculous.
How much was something? I think Vox quoted like $9 billion.
Yeah, that's expected this year to be $9 billion. I think that's just in America, but I'm not sure. It might be worldwide, but which huge amounts of money. And then you got Jeff Bezos at the top.
This is the country.
Is he now the richest man in history?
Yes, I believe so. This is the company that in 2013 was accused of using neo-Nazi guards in warehouses in Germany to beat an immigrant workforce back to work. So, you know, that was 2013. Now it's, I'm not saying that they employ neo-Nazis, but, you know, it doesn't look good, does it? It's not good optics.
Yeah. But as you said, people hear about this. I mean, this is not a secret, but people know about it and then they still buy the deals. And I don't know if they said whether it was a man or woman in the article, also admitted that they still buy deals, still buy from Amazon, but feel profoundly guilty about it.
Yeah.
But just thought, if I don't do it, that's not going to make any difference to Amazon, but it will make a difference to me because this is the only convenient way I have to send presents to loved ones or whatever.
Boycotts do have worked, though, haven't they, throughout history. But you have to wonder, like, if it's a bit too late for that now when you've got this sort of mega retailer controlling so much of the sort of online economy throughout the US and the world, and just increasing as well. Like, it's not happy with its lot. It's just increasing its share of, like, retail sales. So, I don't know, is it even feasible to posit a boycott for something that, like, large, or is it something that only regulation could achieve? I don't know.
Well, Amazon's everywhere as well. It's not as if they're just in retail, right? They're pushing into almost every segment of every market, you know, game development to film production.
To the police state.
Yeah, really. I mean, if we're, you know, if we want to go full dystopian as we're drinking our human-flavoured beverage, we're, you know, and if we're talking about giant super corporations starting to control everything, Amazon isn't too far away.
Well, we've discussed this many times, that they are basically now more powerful than governments.
And yes.
I'm not even sure that regulation can stop them now, because what country is powerful enough to do that?
Yeah,
the most dystopian thing about them is the approved statements they give to the press, and that they call the warehouses things like fulfillment centres. Mm. I mean, what does that mean?
The language is horrible.
They told Vox, like, for many of the managers and associates in fulfillment centres, the holiday season is a fun, exciting place to work. And this is like a company that, you know, there have been workers on record. Bernie Sanders, like, made one of the videos go super viral. A woman who'd been sleeping in her car so she could go to her job at Amazon. People who get...
Working for the richest man in the world.
Working for the richest man in the world, yeah. And, it, you know, he's rich because of these things, you know.
Yeah, it's not despite, it's because. Yeah. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe, and I haven't been watching the latest series, not because I'm sexist, of course.
totally normal thing to say.
Can't wait for this.
I believe this has been addressed obliquely in Doctor Who.
Yeah, not even so obliquely. It's quite, so the latest episode of the new Doctor Who is called Kablam, and it is
good name.
It sees the Doctor and companions visit the warehouse of the biggest online retailer in the galaxy. after like receiving a package with a like note in the package saying "Help me," and they have to go undercover as workers in the warehouse for this mega retailer called Kablam. A lot of it is about automation of the workforce. So it's a plot point that this company gets to call itself proudly people powered because 10% of its workforce is organic.
just like this drink.
Yeah. so it's sort of a weird. It's Doctor Who, like, the episode sets itself up like it's gonna sort of tackle Amazon and these kind of big corporations head on, and you know, it really is about Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's very obvious that Amazon is what it's got in its targets, and it seems not accidental that the episode has come out a week before Black Friday.
Sure.
I don't know how the BBC scheduling works, but it's hard to imagine, you know, that this season has been structured so that you could drop the episodes in almost any order, and it feels like they probably made a choice at some point to think, we'll drop this episode 5 days before Black Friday happens.
Yeah. And it has been quite a political series.
The series has, yeah. One of the early episodes had them visit Rosa Parks during all the bus boycott stuff. An episode the other week was about the separation of India and Pakistan and stuff like that. So it's been doing more political than Doctor Who has been all along.
Does this have American viewers, maybe Breitbart readers, shouting about cultural Marxism in our institutions and that sort of thing, or showing basic human decency in television programming?
Plenty of British viewers shouting the same thing as well. It's been one of those things. There's been a lot of complaints, people saying the show's too political this year. It's too historical this year, and of course it's always done old, you know, going back in time episodes. It's just, it used to be they'd go back to the Victorian era and show a, you know, cheeky chimney boy and everyone would be happy with it, whereas now they're actually like, you know, going to major political points of like recent-ish history, and some of which, you know, the one about India and Pakistan was directly tying into sort of one of the companions' family history as I think she was from the Pakistan side, as a sort of a, you know, third generation Pakistani immigrant to the UK. So it was sort of addressing all that stuff. What's a shame about this episode, the Amazon one, is it kind of sets itself up like it's going to really, you know, give it to them, and then it kind of pulls its punch to the end, and it's a bit of, you know, spoil the ending a little bit, but it turns out actually the setup all along is that the sort of AI system running this warehouse must be the baddie and must be sort of trying to eliminate the organic workforce and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, fucking corporations, boo, hiss. but then what it actually turns out is the bad guy was the left-wing human activist
No.
who was trying to change No. the system, but was using violent means to do so.
Wow,
and the sick. AI system was actually the one who sent the help me message in the first place because it wanted to prevent the deaths because our lovely corporate overlord has our best interests at heart.
That's really not enough cultural Marxism in our institution. That never would have happened.
So yeah. it does set up at the beginning, and it's very open about, you know, sort of the, you know, running theme is, you know, this sort of automation, this doesn't seem good, and taking human... But it's not really willing to commit to it at the end, and it also does a very bad job of... It keeps saying this warehouse job is really rough, and everyone's overworked, and it's got all that same stuff about people having, like, work quotas and all this stuff, but then it doesn't really do a very good job of making it look unpleasant at all, because everyone's just chatting around, and you've got the comedian Lee Mack as one of the people, and he's funny and cheeky and lovely, and,
yeah,
you know,
terrible.
You just sort of feel like, oh, you... It feels like a writer set out to do something that was really going to be kind of harder-hitting... And at some point through the BBC editorial process, it just got watered
Torified.
Down.
Yeah. Has this been seen in Doctor Who before to this extent? Someone who hasn't really watched a whole lot of it before, is this something they touch on often, like political issues? Is this the first season they've done
a bit? It's been more. It's always had since the reboot in 2005. It's always had a bit of an eye on sort of social justice stuff. Like when it was under Russell T. Davies, they made a big point of having lots of LGBT characters at a time when that was. Big. Not very common on TV at all, and try to have a racially diverse cast other than the fact that the Doctor herself has always been white. But not as many of the episodes have been... There's always been a bit of a sort of, you know, you know, it tackles, like, you know, authoritarianism and that kind of thing.
Sure.
It's just that general...
political in a Blairite sense, rather than...
Yeah, a little bit of that. It's very rarely been sort of, you know, outright socialist, that kind of thing. It does feel like this is making a point of doing a bit more of that stuff. But it's equally, in a way, harking back to the very origins of the show. The first season of the show was... Doctor Who was envisaged as a split sci-fi and edutainment show. It made a point, like, one of the sort of plans for the show was that it would always basically alternate between a fantastical science fiction episode and a go back in time to teach children about history episode. And so it's kind of just doing a bit more of that, but, you know, being a bit political about which bits of history it wants to do. Yeah.
I think that is a good point to move on.
Can I just jump in real quick with some good news?
Please.
About Amazon and labour relations.
Oh yeah, go on.
They've been forced to the table for the first time by an immigrant workforce in Minneapolis. And Amazon is famous for not recognising trade unions and definitely not bargaining with workers. And so these logistics workers got together due to, there was a New York Times article about it, cultural similarities. They talked and discussed their grievances and planned mass walkouts, and Amazon came to the table to discuss some compromises, and those weren't good enough, and they walked out again. So, you know, there's some glimmers of potential hope amidst all the dystopian putting people in cages in warehouses.
Yeah,
and such.
Yeah, and on a similar, I mean, maybe not quite as hopeful, but all the stuff around that HQ2 in New York has, it's bad that that does look like it's going ahead, and it will do bad things for a lot of New York, but it has prompted genuine and like outrage and outrage across both sides of the aisle in terms of the US political system.
Which is rare.
Which is really rare. Like, people are, you know, the fact that actually there are, you know, Republicans and Democrats agreeing on something, and it's, oh shit, Amazon's fucking up something.
When you've got Republicans saying Amazon's a bit too evil for
us. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it looks like people are being, you know, that seems to have sparked a bit more awareness of the damage it can do as a company, and how Amazon wading into a city promising jobs doesn't always... isn't necessarily a good thing.
This is promising. This is I like to end on an optimistic note. So I think we should all take another swig of our delicious human-themed drink.
Here's to you.
Here's to you, Jeff Bezos.
Cheers.
This is actually growing on me. It's got a weird first taste.
Something's growing.
Yeah. In which way?
Growing in you or on you?
The initial flavour I still don't like, but the mid-flavour, not quite the aftertaste, but the mid-flavour is quite pleasing.
The mid-flavour?
The mouthfeel.
No, the mouthfeel's the
worst.
Well,
the mouthfeel is not good.
Almost latexy, isn't it?
Yeah, that film, there's a film developing on my tongue almost. It's...
Latex is not a good word to use about food. We're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to talk.
We're going to talk about something else.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Sean Bradley, you are a bit of a crypto man.
That is the rumour.
That's like a superhero sort of concept I quite like. But something bad is happening in the world of crypto. Can you explain to the, I was going to say the non-technical listeners, but actually the non-technical host as well.
Troubling crypto down. If crypto man was a superhero, he'd be ill in bed with the flu right now because the crypto world is in turmoil, David, and there's only one man who can save it. and no one knows who that is.
All right. It's not Crypto Man.
No,
I thought you were going to say Elon Musk.
Yeah, no. So
he's got a submarine just ready for this.
He does, yeah. So Bitcoin is at its lowest point for about a year and a half. We've currently seen a pretty big crash. So its high point from 17th of December last year was $19,500 per Bitcoin. Yeah. And we're down at $4,500 as of today, roughly.
Okay.
So for the past sort of, since June this year, it's been, so since 17th of December last year, Bitcoin's, it's had peaks and troughs, but it's slowly been going down. In sort of a general cryptocurrency bull market, which is caused by a lot of things, which I'll go into in a second. But it was sort of holding steady for a while at about $6,500. And it was there for about sort of 4 or 5 months. So it would go, sort of go up or down by sort of 5%, which is not a lot in crypto, weirdly. And it would sort of hover. But then very recently, it's just completely fallen through the floor. There were a lot of people who believed that the bear market had sort of run its course, that it was going to stay at $6,500. I sort of read an article that suggested that $6,500 was essentially its operating cost. So without going into it too much, to mine a Bitcoin requires an amount of resources, so PC hardware, electricity, everything else. And the idea that was pitched in this article was that a Bitcoin will cost about $6,200 to mine, and it was sitting at about $6,500 value. So it was basically just slightly higher. But then that hypothesis completely fell out the window when it just dropped down to 4,500. So the issue is,
Bitcoin's become more expensive to make, to mine as we go along, right?
Yes. Yeah, so the
value needs to go up to make them.
Yes, it does. Right. I mean, the thing is that there's a huge issue with, like, most, you can use technical analysis in the stock market, sort of, you know, using just maths to make predictions. But the whole problem with the cryptocurrency market, because it's unregulated, means that it's incredibly emotional. So trying to make predictions based on any real hard facts, you know, sometimes it will just jump up and down for reasons that no one really knows.
Like the economy in general.
Like the economy in general. Although Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in general, it's like the economy on fast forward. I mean, the rate that it moves up and down is honestly terrifying. I mean,
there are normally some kinds of tether points to the real economy, aren't there? Like companies performing, companies selling things.
Yes.
So if you've got shares in it, you know, and I do agree that economics is just mad, and the share market is absolutely mad. But I think I get the impression that crypto is particularly mad. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and you'll see if you've got sort of gone, you know, crypto Reddits or forums, you'll see people sort of justifying reasons as to why, you know, I think that, you know, when the crash began last year, people were saying that the reason that it went up so much is because bankers got their bonuses and they put it all into crypto because bankers know it all. And then when it started to crash, they thought it was because of Chinese New Year, because people were taking out of crypto in China. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, if you want to see an echo chamber, check out some cryptocurrency Reddit. Yeah, so
actually the processes also are really weird. Like, it's very hard to get out your money. It's very hard to, like, I'm really gonna just betray my ignorance here, but I was told that once you have Bitcoin, it's very hard to withdraw your money from that, and therefore it's sort of built into it that people find it hard to get out, and so they stay in for longer, and then when the crash comes, it's worse.
There's a certain amount of truth to that. It's becoming slowly easier to get. If you're owning Bitcoin or Ethereum, which are the two main cryptocurrencies, the two primary ones, it's fairly easy to pull it out. The issue, particularly in the US, was that, oh boy, so every time you made a transaction within cryptocurrency, you were taxed on its value changing, which means that if you're someone who has done a lot of trades in cryptocurrency and then you pull your money back out into fiat currency, dollars, you will be hit with a huge tax bill, which a lot of people were really struggling to pay. And there's, you know, it's really, I mean, it's sort of like any sort of Wild West-ish type market where it's just a complete, you know, I mean, it's amazing to watch, because it's just the level of sort of money that's floating around and it's completely unregulated, which is sort of part of the reason why it's crashed as well. So sort of last year, there were, as the entire cryptocurrency market went up, there were a load of ICOs spawning, which is an initial coin investment, where someone could say, I've got this great new cryptocurrency, it's got this fantastic team, they all went to Harvard, here's our white paper about what it's about, you should invest with us because it's going to be the next big thing. But then, because the market's unregulated, there was some very shady stuff where they would have sell off all these coins, let's say 80% of the coins, to specific investors where the public couldn't get a hold of them yet, drive a huge marketing campaign to see how good this coin was, keep the supply low, so there'd be a the public would hear about this coin, wouldn't be able to get that much of it. Price would go up because they're all clamoring for it. Everyone who was given the initial bunch of coins would just sell them off at the price, and then it would just everything would completely fall apart. And this happened again and again for a long time.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's just, it's hard to imagine that this is allowed to proceed.
Yes.
How, why is it not more regulated?
That is a good question. I think it's because, I mean, it's hard for, I mean, it's sort of slowly moving towards a point where it's getting more official. I mean, there are a lot of companies looking into it now. I mean, using blockchain technology, which is the thing that supports cryptocurrencies, sort of looking at using it more seriously for business. It's just a real minefield. And I think that the technology has moved faster than a lot of the governments. So there's not a lot of people in government who perhaps understand it as well as they should.
The FCA and the SEC are beginning to regulate it, though. They're looking into it.
They're slowly getting there.
Whether they'll be able to get their heads around it is another thing entirely, because I don't think people trading on it really have their heads around it.
No, there's a lot of that. So we're currently in a very serious bear market where a lot of people have lost a lot of money. And there's, you know, no one is going to know 100% for sure, but, you know, the idea that people who control most of the bits, you know, sort of in the same way that wealth is in the world, you know, sort of 80% of Bitcoin is going to be controlled by sort of a small handful of people.
What's the phrase for that again? Whaling or something? Is that something else?
Yeah, so the whole idea that whales are controlling sort of the market, so they're you know, those with the most can sort of dictate the price the most, because if you've got the most of something, you know, you can, it's easier for you to dictate its price. Not buying or selling at certain points, or, you know, if super rich people are holding a load of Bitcoin, perhaps they're not going to be forced to sell it if it turns down, because if they lose, you know, that they can afford. Whereas if the average person on the street who's bought some Bitcoin and sees its price going down might need that $1,000, $500, or whatever it is.
I was talking to a journalist from the Next Web on a trip recently, and he thought that there's so much worse to come in terms of crypto. Like, he thinks that the bottom hasn't really fallen out of it yet, and when it does, it will be more catastrophic than it already has been. Do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think sort of, I mean, it's trying to gauge public opinion on it is a pretty good way of sort of seeing, you know, again, particularly if you go into places where people are discussing constantly, people are still sitting there waiting for the next big bull run to happen. And that's almost an indicator that, you know, it isn't, like, you know, really it has to hit rock bottom before it's going to go back up again. If people are still sitting there waiting for it to all be great again, they're still holding out hope, then it hasn't quite got to the very lowest point yet, which a lot of people believe it needs to in order for it to go up again. But then it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy because of all this ICO stuff where people are essentially getting scammed out of a load of money. The only way it's going to really go back up again is by people putting more money into the market. But no one wants to do that because no one trusts it right now. Understandably, yeah. Why? So, I mean, there's two things that are really going to be a catalyst for another bull run is widespread institutional investment, which is happening in certain areas, but not necessarily with Bitcoin, although it's kind of weirdly sort of linked. But there are sort of currencies being developed specifically for business uses.
I mean, my perception of it, and this might be entirely wrong, but most Bitcoin investors are like chancers, or libertarian freaks, or drug dealers.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, which, all the people
which
I know
one is sure?
Which one? I dabble. I'm all three. It's essentially, I mean, if you're under the illusion that it's anything other than gambling, then you're wrong.
It's also environmentally irresponsible. And I know I always say this every time we discuss it.
Yes.
It's an institutionalized process of transforming natural resources into theoretical money.
Yes.
And that makes me so angry.
Yes.
That you've got people out there who are buying these rigs that are just designed to burn electricity and then make these theoretical numbers in the internet that will then lose all their value. And what is the point? We have limited resources on this planet.
Yes.
We need the electricity. Please stop doing this.
I agree. So as devil's advocate to that, what people like so much about cryptocurrencies is it's not controlled by banks. And considering that, you know, the widespread, everyone believes that the banks were essentially responsible for the last economic turndown.
Yeah.
It's not going too much better for
that's very true. It's not, but the fact that if it's cryptocurrency, you let's put aside the fact that the value's going up and down like the big ride at Alton Towers. It's, you know, you have direct control of your money. If all your money is in cryptocurrency, you're not relying on a bank to keep that safe for you. A bank isn't charging you, you know, because it's like when I think in Greece a couple of years ago when they were having trouble, people were showing up at the bank and saying, "I'd like to take my money out," and the bank was like, "No."
Yeah, that with Northern Rock.
Yeah, and that won't. And for all its other faults, which are many, that won't happen with cryptocurrency because it's always yours and you can always take it back.
You're kind of painting a picture of crypto people as like those slightly paranoid old people who keep all of their savings in cash under the mattress.
There's a lot of that going on. Yeah.
Daily Mail readers.
Yeah. But just finally, in terms of this sort of like public opinion, at least in the crypto world, it's still fairly positive. People are talking about the dot-com crash where, you know, it was in 2000. So between 2000 and 2002, I think Amazon lost 98% of its value after the dot-com crash. And now look at Jeff. He's riding high on...
Yeah.
So there are, you know...
Yeah, well, Amazon was a funny one, though, because it benefited from the dot-com crash.
Absolutely. I'm not... Yeah.
Because all of its rivals were killed, and it was nearly killed.
Yes,
and...
which is also sort of what's happening with cryptocurrency, because sort of Bitcoin is sort of half of the market cap of every cryptocurrency. And then again, people are likening it to Tulip Mania, which happened in 1637 in the Netherlands.
We've talked about it on this podcast before, actually, and it turns out it was quite misreported.
Yeah, oh really? Yeah.
It wasn't actually as irrational as people thought, which is my fault because I didn't fully research that. I think we should wrap it up here. Should we go around the table with a question? Bitcoin or... Bitcoin.
Could have said Bitcoin, just saying.
Bitcoin, good, that's it.
Why don't you say that before?
Shitcoin.
Bitcoin or shitcoin, that's even better.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Bitcoin or shitcon. Shitcon, there you
shitcon,
go.
There we go.
Dominic.
Shitcon, I guess. I can't imagine ever putting any money anywhere near crypto. Mate, I just don't understand it. It's weird.
I think that is a good principle. Don't put your money into things you don't understand. Sean?
As a man who has put money into crypto and is currently feeling sorry for himself, I still think there's still hope for the cryptocurrency market, gents. And when I can afford my yacht, you're all not welcome on it.
Harsh. And Tamlin?
Shitcon. Don't want to be on that yacht anyway.
You don't strike me as a yacht man. Come on, finish your drinks.
I cannot.
Finish.
Are you serious? I'm not finished. Have a little bit more.
Cheers.
I've maybe had a quarter of it.
Not bad.
I'll say this for it. It's better than Huel, which is a really, really low bar. I tried Huel once. It was foul. Much thicker than Soylent. Huel really felt like sludge you had to really force down.
Slurry. I'd love if they quoted you on that on their marketing. Yeah. Better than Huel without all the rest. You know? Don Preston, he loves it.
And that brings us to the end of another... episode of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Thank you for your thoughts, gentlemen. Until next time, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.